Welcome to the podcast for the table at Central United Methodist Church. We gather in the beauty of this sanctuary each Sunday morning at 9:30 and 11 a.m. to root our lives in grace. We're located in the corner of 53rd and H Street in East Sacramento. This year, December 24th happens to fall on a Sunday, and so we want to make a special note of our schedule for worship services on Christmas Eve. We will gather one time on Sunday, December 24th in the morning. And that experience at 11 a.m. will be the closing of our worship series called The Hopes and Fears of All the Years. As we move toward the mystery and the hope of Christmas, we invite you to join us on Christmas Eve at 11 a.m. And then we will transition the sanctuary and prepare for Candlelight Christmas Eve. We'll gather at 5 p.m. here in the sanctuary for a worship experience that will be inviting for children and families, but always welcoming to persons of all ages. At 5 p.m., we'll gather around the story of the birth of Christ from the Gospel of Luke, and we'll weave that together with carols and then the singing of Silent Night as we close by passing the light of Christ one to another and leading us out into the world. And then finally at 11 p.m., we'll return here to the sanctuary for Candlelight Christmas Eve once more. At 11, our worship will be rooted in the story of the birth of Christ from the Gospel of John. That story will be woven together with carols as we also gather around the sacrament of communion and then pass the light of Christ as we sing Silent Night. So we hope that you will join us this Advent season as we prepare for the coming of a Christ child to meet the hopes and the fears of all of our years.
Joy to those who long to see the days we come on high appear. Come, thou promised rod of Jesse, of thy birth we long to hear. O'er the hills the angels sing. Things as they are not okay. When God's power seems missing, God's love feels absent. They will say things as they are not okay. When God's power seems missing, God's love feels absent.
A reading from the book of Isaiah, the 61st chapter. The Spirit of the Lord, the Sovereign Lord, is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. They will rebuild the ancient ruins and restore the places long devastated. They will renew the ruined cities that have been devastated for generations.
They will say things as they are not okay. When hope seems missing, life together is shattered. They will say things as they are not okay. When hope seems missing, life together is shattered.
For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery and wrongdoing. In my faithfulness, I will reward my people and make an everlasting covenant with them. Their descendants will be known among the nations and their offspring among the peoples. All who see them will acknowledge that they are a people the Lord has blessed.
They will say things as they are not okay. When pieces they broken, lives empty and scattered. They will say things as they are not okay.
I delight greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in my God. For he has clothed me with garments of salvation and arrayed me in a robe of his righteousness. As a bridegroom adorns his head like a priest, and a bride adorns herself with her jewels. For as the soil makes the sprout come up and the garden causes seeds to grow, so the sovereign Lord will make righteousness and praise spring up before all nations.
This week, I got to have coffee with a young person from our community, and this young person makes their living with a camera. Their work is as a photographer, and some of their work feels to them really inspired and inspiring, and more often than they would like to admit, it just is to kind of pay the bills right now. And I know that there are other artists in the room that can relate to that. This person pays careful attention to light and to contrast, and then they help us to see something that's right before us in a new way. A few weeks ago, they returned on Thanksgiving back to their house to reconnect with family and with friends, and then after that time, they made their way a few hours from their parents' home out into a desert for a personal retreat time. And everything lined up. The person had their, on their car, you've been in that moment where on your car, the light starts to flash that says something is wrong. And if you're as skilled as I am, that means you have no idea how to fix it. And that happened. And this person made their way all the way to the desert and decided they're just going to keep pushing through. And as they arrived, that light went off. They're like, I think this is a good place for me to spend a little bit of time. And so the sun went down, and in the silent starkness of the night out in the wilderness, this person had a powerful experience that they had a hard time putting words to, and maybe you've had some in your own life. They were overcome by this phenomenal recognition that the person, the life that they've created wasn't really the life that they had imagined. And then as they were holding all of that out in the quiet darkness of the night, they were overcome again by this sense that their ego's story had been getting in the way a lot. They'd been trying to be this kind of artist because it would be celebrated in that kind of a way. And they found in the middle of the night there this deep sense of like their own need for their ego story to fade away and then to just behold the beauty and the mystery of life. And this person wanted to meet to talk about like how do we keep that feeling going? Like, how do we do that in our life together? We call that experience in our Christian tradition grace. And Flannery O'Connor once wrote to a friend, "All human nature vigorously resists grace because grace changes us, and the change is painful." This young artist had been resisting grace for some time, and I think it's fair to say their resistance was vigorous. And in part, the resistance was about self-preservation. They had grown up in an experience of Christianity that was violent and violating. And in their younger years, they needed to separate from that sense of what Christianity was in order to just keep on keeping on. And like so many folks in this room, they didn't want to be that kind of Christian. And in that, they also decided that they weren't going to be any kind of Christian at all. That seemed like the only alternative to them. See, they experienced followers of Jesus as hypocritical and judgmental. And if there was a job description for a Christian, as this person was sharing, it would go something like this: wanted, self-righteous and closed-minded individuals that are willing to stand high atop a soapbox so that they can hold a megaphone and condemn what everyone is doing in their bedrooms and from a sense of moral superiority. And that was the job description that they felt like clearly Christians had to have. Thankfully, Jesus found a very different job description for himself. In Luke 4, we hear Jesus say what I'll call his job description, and he does it by plagiarizing Isaiah. Jesus stands before everyone, reading in the synagogue, in his own community, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because God has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. God has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." That's Jesus singing a new redemption song that is deeply rooted in the Jewish tradition of his own family and friends. Pastor Linda began our Advent worship series on the hopes and fears of all the years by reflecting on how this season, this time of getting ready for the mystery of Christmas, can feel suffocating for her. Like the people in ancient Israel who returned from Babylon with dashed hopes, the weeks leading up to Christmas inevitably remind Pastor Linda of lost pregnancies and lost loved ones. And so this is her mother-in-law's pottery from early in her career as an artist on the left. And then on the right, you see what she started to create as she became a widow. And it's that juxtaposition that Linda feels as she moves. And the world says, just cover up the grief with shimmering lights. But our Christian tradition calls us to this deeper, harder way where the hopes and fears are held as we journey toward Bethlehem. And I wonder then, in that, can some of us hear that new redemption song? And then Pastor Chris shared about how his father and Linda's father shared the same birth date, and that was about all they shared in common. Because for him, there was a sadness at not feeling sadness when his father passed away. Grief has so many different expressions and ways that it comes to us. And Chris invited us and shared comforting words to help us imagine ourselves, those of us who have felt for a long time like the dirt of shame has been covering us up, that it might just be a seed that we are becoming and that God is raising up. And some of us might hear in that a new redemption song. Martha Spong, who's a pastor, she writes, "What a gift it is then to be reminded by Isaiah that the Messiah will not come to congratulate the happy couples or the high-five the winners or to bend an elbow with the successful or the folks that have their shopping lists all figured out. The Messiah will come to walk with the widow, to comfort the lost, to take a knee with the oppressed. The prophet promises release, liberty, comfort, rebuilding, and binding up of the brokenhearted, restoration of what is lost. See, if the church was to write a job description, it seems to me that that might be a pretty good place to start. Wanted. A ragtag, eclectic group of nonconformists that are willing to put their own egos aside and learn to share life together by being defined in relationship to God's call to exist for the sake of the oppressed, the brokenhearted, the imprisoned, and the mournful. The list of tasks on that job description might include things like gathering to learn how to welcome refugees in your midst. It might include things like bringing gifts to share in the sanctuary to homeless teen mommies who are trying to figure out how to move from surviving to thriving. It might include tasks like getting up early in the morning to turn the coffee on so that when people arrive at that little eclectic church, they feel a sense of welcome and embrace. Or staying afterwards to clean up, to make that space feel encouraging for those around us. It might even include lines like showing up to create space with others so that you can begin to share how it is with your soul and then begin to hear how it is with someone else's. It might even include things like sharing generously with those that have been devastated by fires. In our second reading this morning on this third Sunday of Advent, we encounter John, who is setting aside his ego needs in order to share life together by aligning his life with God's call. And it can get a bit confusing for a lot of us. There's so many Johns going on in the New Testament. There's the author of the Gospel of John, and then there's John the Baptist. I want to get a couple things mapped out for us. This John that we're encountering is not the author of the book of John that we're reading from. Kind of odd, but that's not the case. This John is the one that baptizes Jesus in the River Jordan. And if you are reading Mark's Gospel, you might think, is this even the same person? Because in Mark's Gospel, John the Baptist is out on the wilderness, on the edge. He's this fierce prosecutor that is ready to take down anyone and everyone for the sake of righteousness. But in this version, in John's Gospel, John is just a witness. It's kind of underwhelming relative to all the rest of those versions of John that we encounter. To be sure, followers of Jesus throughout the generations have gotten all kinds of screwed up on what it means to be a witness. But the job of a witness is simply to share what they saw. Share what they know. That's their job description. Witnesses don't so much tell us about their own lives. They stand before us and share about what they saw, observed right in front of them. Like the person that I was talking with coffee earlier this week, I have been a reluctant witness for most all of my life. I didn't want to be that kind of Christian. One of the first things that my partner Sarah is a family physician at UC Davis, and we moved out here when she started residency. And one of the very first things that we did was start to meet all of the doctors in family and community medicine that she was going to be working with and learning from. And I remember I was in seminary, I wasn't yet a pastor, and I was trying this thing on about following Jesus. I wasn't really sure where I was going to go with this. I was holding it at a distance. I definitely didn't want a deep commitment. If anything, it would be like a super shallow commitment is what I was ready to make. And we would go to dinner and we would meet these like fabulous women's health doctors, these feminist physicians, and I would try to like hide. And then when it would come out like another person's partner, what do they do for a living? This person's a teacher. That's so easy to explain. And then I'd try to figure out how am I going to say it. Well, I work with a nonprofit. Well, I'm kind of like a community organizer in East Sacramento. I study religion and social change. That one worked for a long time. I study religion and social change. And then finally, I would mumble. Like, I'm trained to be a United Methodist pastor. And then I would, like, immediately go into this apologetic, but wait, I'm not that kind of a Christian. And so my witnessing, do you see how it gets all tangled up in my own ego to like have this person think I'm okay rather than just witnessing what's right before me and thinking I'm like untangling myself from something? I'm really making everything all about that very thing that I so want to, I had a long list of things that I am not. And John, the witness, has a lot of things that he's not too. And that's where the gospel takes us right away. These religious authorities come out to John, and I don't know, maybe he felt the same kind of anxiety that I did, or something similar as he responded. They want to know, who are you? And he could just answer. First, he could just say, I'm John. He doesn't even go with that. He says, I am not the Messiah. That's the very first thing he says in terms of who are you. I am not the Messiah. And then, I'm not Elijah. I'm not the prophet like Moses that Israel's been waiting for. 10 times in 13 verses, we get a no or a not or a neither. John really wants to be clear on what he's not before he starts to get into what he is. And finally, he paraphrases, plagiarizes Isaiah in his own way. He says, I'm the voice of one crying out in the wilderness. See, John is not the light. He's not the word. John's sole purpose is to bear witness to the one that he is not. It's his job description, is simply to be a voice that prepares the way and points to the one that will meet the hopes and fears of all the years. Before John can get to what he is, he has to first work through and be clear about what he's not. He has to set some clear limitations and boundaries around who he's not. Not the Messiah, not Elijah. It's John saying, like, we are not the Christ. Our job description is not to save people. See, 26 times in John's gospel, Jesus says the great I am. He says, I am, 26 times. So in counterpoint to that, it's not a coincidence that John leads with, I am not. Do you see the poetry as you're moving through this? I am not. And I don't know about you, but I'm really good at saying a lot of the things that I'm not. We gathered in retreat last weekend with 31 folks that long to gain courage and confidence as spiritual leaders. And some of the things that were shared from the very beginning, I'm not here as a leader. I'm really not here as a spiritual leader. I'm not very good at talking about faith. See, finding courage and confidence to move through those knots to what we are is a risky and daunting and frightening thing for a whole lot of us. And what I hear in John's story in part is this reminder that we can't just be against, but we need to figure out what it is that we're going to be for as well. The religious authorities demand to know from John, who are you? And he clearly moves through what he's not, and then he says, I'm the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, who baptizes with water and prepares the way for the one in whom the hopes and fears of all the years will be met, who baptizes in the Spirit. And so while it may not be our job to save people, it is our job description to be witnesses, voices, even ears and hands and feet that point toward the one in whom the hopes and fears of all the years are met. And for me, this installation that's behind us has been one of the ways that I've started to find my way toward Bethlehem this Advent season. Eric Castellanos is one of the artists in residence here in our community, and he started to create this a number of months ago as we shared with him our theme for this series, and he lived with it and worked with it. And as I came in the first time, usually they keep all these things secret from me because they know that I will get in the way and I'll get all involved and think I need to fix everything that's happening there. So Eric started to sketch this stuff out, and then he would step away from it. And then after we finished our series on Ruth and thinking through immigration, the space was just open, and Eric came in with these little sketches and had to figure out, how am I going to take all the stuff? He set these limits. I'm not going to use these paints. I'm not going to use these objects. He had to start with those limits. And then he came in and there was, what do I create? And so he had to improvise as he did this, and he found himself getting in the flow. And he's learned as an artist, once you get to that flow, you need to stop there, because if you go past the flow too much, you come back and you have all this critique for what you had just done. And so he worked on this for several days. And when I came in the door the first time, I was taken aback. Oftentimes, artists don't get the the scale of how big something needs to be in order to be in a sanctuary. And this is Eric's very first attempt at doing something like this, which is also amazing to me. Our daughter has walked in with me several times, and she's like, "But Daddy, what is it?" And Linda will laugh because that's kind of what I asked the first time I came in. Like, what is it? I want to put it in a box. I want to say what it is. It's not kinda. That's actually exactly what I said. And so I stood here and I didn't know what it was. And Eleanor wanted me to say what it is. Is it a manger? Is it a house? Are those plants that lead to the house? And we lived in that together and have found our way and wondering. And for some among us, like the candles on these steps might evoke memories of childhood experiences in Catholic churches where you're lighting the candles in those tiered ways. Or the dirt that's on this side with the plants growing up out of it, both the like ruggedness and the hope of this season. Seeds within dirt that might sprout. A few of us were returning here last Saturday after having spent 2 days with Sandra Lamason in retreat. And I came into this sanctuary, and this installation became for me a voice that was crying out in the wilderness. And I wasn't out under the stars alone in the desert like my friend who had driven for a couple of hours to be on retreat. I was simply going through the motions of my day, at least I thought. And then I was transported by this witness. In the silence of this seemingly empty sanctuary, I was flooded with memories. Hearing that young artist telling me about being overcome by an experience of grace out in the desert helped me realize that that's what was happening for me last Saturday too in this very space. Standing here, gazing in this direction towards the art without any of the lights on in this space, I could hear this simple chorus that Joey had been leading us in just a few hours before. But instead of the chorus just being the voices of those 30 or so folks gathered at the church in retreat, I started to hear it go in rounds. And it was like the communities of faith that had shaped our family singing and joining in rounds together with that. Like all of these different people who have witnessed to love in their lives and in the world, it felt to me like they were there. They were here. I was with them in this space, this thin place. And then I had this ineffable like memory of all of the groups, whether we called it Blueprint for Discipleship or Growing in Faith, that have sat in a circle around this very space and tried to learn together about how do we share about how it is with our soul. So I heard Melissa in this saying, we came in, and then the next time we brought the boy. And then we were worried because we've been waiting, like, when's the other shoe going to drop? I know they say all means all, but it can't really be true. And then I heard Carrie go into this loud voice about, like, the elephant in the room is that church can't be this way. And all of that was there. And then I could just see like the wet faces of folks who didn't have words for what they were experiencing. But they were longing for a day of peace in their lives and in the world. It was like a voice crying out in the wilderness, reminding me of the cloud of witnesses who have helped prepare the way for me to see and experience the love of God that is so often right in front of me and goes unnoticed. The hopes and fears of all the years were somehow held in the beauty and the mystery as I stood here before Bethlehem, realizing that we are Bethlehem. Flannery O'Connor wrote, "All human nature vigorously resists grace, because grace changes us, and the change is painful. I vigorously, mostly unconsciously, resist grace over and over. And my resistance might look different than yours, but mine is about, instead of hearing the voice crying in the wilderness, as a reminder that God is coming to walk with the widow and to comfort the lost and to take a knee with the oppressed, to bind the brokenhearted, I find that job description that God places on the one who comes to save on my shoulders, and I'm trying to think through how am I going to fix all these things to make it right. I was doing this like 2 hours ago as I was trying to figure out how do we set up some things here in the sanctuary. And I don't know what your resistance to grace looks like, but I know we all have it. And John was clear that he wasn't the Messiah. If he did anything at all, he got those job descriptions all figured out. And then he found his way moving through every not and neither and no to figure out how he was going to be a voice, much like Eric found his way to be a voice for me in this moment. The hopes and the fears of all the years will be met in the life of a vulnerable child in a little town that's far away and right here. Our task, my task, our job description in these coming days is simply to be present, to see the beauty and the hope that's right before us, so often overlooked. To be faithful witnesses, we'll need to see what's right before us. And then we might find with our words, our ears, our hands, our feet, and our hearts that we can join with John in crying out a new redemption song. Amen.
O day of peace that dimly shines through all our hopes and prayers and dreams, guide us to justice, truth, and love. Delivered from our selfish schemes, may swords of hate fall from our hands, our hearts of God's grace, our warring world shall see Christ's bride.